So instead of doing this liquid measurement thing that other instructors do this first week, I am going to talk about some scientific fundamentals, which takes me a while to get through, so if you're already sick of hearing me, this will be a bad day for you. Starting, as you see, with quantities and units. Now, I will post a link to this thing in case you want to look at it. When I post the link to the recording, it'll be in the same place. But quantities and units. Now, does anyone want to tell us what either of these is? You know what a quantity is, or do you know what a unit is? Or what's the difference?
Quantity is how much of something, unit is how it's measured.
Depends on what you mean by that. A quantity is really just anything that is measurable. And there's no limit to the number of quantities that exist. But what's an example of a quantity? Best way to learn this stuff is just by examples, yeah. Yes, number of items, in other words, is a quantity. What's another one? No, liquids is not a quantity. Now, there are quantities having to do with liquids, but liquids themselves are just substances. If you're measuring something, you don't say you measure liquid, right? You have to measure something about the liquid. For instance, you could measure its mass, you could measure its volume. Those are quantities. You could measure its viscosity. That's a quantity. All right, so distance is a quantity. Like I said, no limit. Just about anything you can measure is a quantity. How is that different from unit? What is a unit? Right. Quantities are measured in standardized sizes called units. All right. For instance, distance, a quantity, you have a lot of choices for units, not just one. In fact, you have multiple choices as to systems of units. There's been all kinds of different systems of measurement throughout the ages. There's, unfortunately, in this country, and only two other countries in the world, what I call the silly system, the system that you grew up with, that is much harder than the sane system that the rest of the world uses. Well, the sane system is the metric system. But in each of those two systems, you have multiple choices as to units, right? You could measure a distance any number of ways, units-wise. You could measure it in the silly system, for instance. You could measure it in feet, in rods, in inches, in miles, all kinds of unit. But you see the difference between the unit and the quantity, right? The quantity itself is what you measure. What you measure it in are the units. And you get a choice of units. All right. Everyone have a clear understanding of the difference between unit and quantity. That's what everyone always says. But then the quizzes tell me differently. So if you truly don't, then stop me. Don't just agree to get out of here. Alright? If everyone is okay with that difference, though, then let me say that there are two categories of each of these. There are what are called fundamental quantities. That's one category. And there are derived quantities. Correspondingly, there are fundamental units and derived units. derived. D-E-R-I-V-E-D. Yeah. Can't hear you. Fundamental and derived. Now, a little bit ago, I said that there's really no limit to the number of quantities. But there is a probably surprisingly small number, probably surprising to you, small number of fundamental quantities. The vast, vast majority of quantities are derived, not fundamental. What distinguishes the two is that a fundamental quantity stands by itself. It is its own thing. It is not made up of other quantities. All right? If you're comfortable enough with chemistry, there's a good analogy with chemistry. Elements are fundamental in this analogy. There's only so many of them, right? They're listed on the periodic table of the elements. Well, there's millions and millions of different chemicals, but only roughly 100 elements. And you can combine those elements into an unlimited number of compounds. The compounds are like derived quantities because they're made up of two or more elements. Not even really two or more elements. Yeah, two or more elements. They don't have to be even different elements, though, is what I'm saying. Whereas an element stands by itself. So, once again, it's important to think of some good examples. You can count the number of fundamental quantities just with your hands in all of the universe. All of the other millions and millions of quantities are really just combinations of the fundamental quantities. So who can tell me a fundamental quantity? Yeah. Those are objects, not quantities. But if if a measurement that you're making about atoms is how many there are, which would be number of items, like we were talking about before, that is a fundamental quantity. A number of particles is a fundamental quantity. By the way, any given quantity, whether it's fundamental or derived, has any number of units associated with it, as we just talked about, right? Well, if a quantity is fundamental, then any unit of that quantity is by definition also fundamental. All right? And similarly, if a quantity, much more probably, is derived rather than fundamental, then any unit of that quantity is also a derived unit. All right, so number of particles. Well, what unit in science do we use for number of particles? The mole. Which is simply a number. Just like dozen is, right? Dozen is also a unit of number of particles. When I say I'll give you a dozen, you have no idea what I'm giving you, right? Only how many. Similarly, a mole is simply a number. It's just a hell of a lot bigger than a dozen. What is a mole equal to numerically? It's Avogadro's number, named after a dead guy, which is, at least to a few decimal places, 6.022 times 10 to the 23rd power. That is enormous. Why would you have a unit that is such a big number? Well, you wouldn't. You choose this unit if you were counting houses. or planets. But if you're counting something that is so tiny that it takes a ridiculously big number of them even before you start seeing that group, then you want to count them in a unit that is a big number. That's what a mole is. But anyway, that is a fundamental unit, because number of particles is a fundamental quantity. There aren't very many fundamental quantities, but you know several more still. What's another example of a fundamental quantity? Something that stands on its own. It's not made out of other quantities. Time is fundamental. It's not made out of other quantities. And therefore, any unit of time, year, second, whatever, those are fundamental units. Now, to make it more clear what the distinction is, let's consider an example of a derived quantity. What's a good derived quantity? Now, this is much easier because almost all quantities are derived.
Derived, that's how you say it, compound.
Right. Now, back to this analogy. There are compounds which are made out of different atoms, but there are also elemental molecules. So don't think of it as compound versus atom, think of it as molecule versus atom. What I mean here is, for instance, oxygen molecule would be derived because it's made out of two atoms, not just one, even though they're the same kind of atom. Okay? In quantity terms, area, you recognize that as a quantity, first of all, right? Not a unit. Well, area is what? How do you measure area? It's two-dimensional, right? A dimension is a unit, by the way. It's another word for unit. So you can think of it as length times width, right? Well, length and width are two different words for distance. So area is really distance times distance. There's the same quantity used twice, but since it's two of them or more, it's not fundamental. It's a derived quantity. You see more clearly now what I'm talking about? And therefore, any choice of unit for area, it could be acre, square meter, whatever, those are all derived units, because area is a derived quantity. Is that better?
Does that mean distance would be fundamental?
Distance is fundamental, yes. Distance, time, number of particles, those are three of the very few fundamental quantities. And you use all three of these in biology. Well, let's scroll down here and look at some important quantities. Now, these are just important quantities for biology. It doesn't tell you whether they're derived or fundamental. It's a mix. But I just told you that time is fundamental. What about mass? First of all, before we say whether it's fundamental or not, what the hell is mass? No, the amount of space that something takes up is volume.
Object.
No, it's not weight, but I'm glad you said that. Someone always does, and that allows me to tell you that they're related, but importantly different.
Density?
Not density either.
So
no, mass is the amount. Go ahead.
Gravity?
No, that has to do with weight.
Is it everything?
Mass is the amount of matter that something is made out of. It's the amount of material in an object. Now, this is why it's related to weight, but it's not weight. All right? So mass depends on the object. How much matter is contained in that sample is its mass. Weight, on the other hand, is an example of a force. Specifically, the weight of an object is it's the force due to gravity on that object. Something is heavier, it has a greater weight in a gravitational field, like Earth, the more mass it has. That's why they're related. But consider going out into space. If you go out into space, you're made of the same amount of material. Your mass doesn't change when you're in space. But you're suddenly weightless. Because you're not near an object that's pulling on you with gravity. So you don't have that force. You still have the stuff, though. That's the mass. Mass is fundamental. Weight, or any force, is derived. Now, who's famous for an equation about forces? What fairly smart dude who's now dead? Newton. Newton's famous for F equals ma, right? Or maybe you don't know that, but it's force equals mass times acceleration. If you look at this equation, it shows you that force, and weight is just one of several forces. Any force, though, is, by this definition, derived, right? Because it's made up of mass and acceleration, which are two quantities. So it's a derived quantity. In fact, acceleration just by itself is already derived, because acceleration is distance per time per time. It's made up of three quantities. And therefore, force is made up of four. So it's a derived quantity. And weight, all weights are forces, but not all forces are weights. Weight is force specifically due to gravity. But all forces are derived, so all weights are derived. By the way, we should be mentioning some units as we go here. Time is kind of an exception because the metric system, the reason it is so easy and accepted by everyone except the United States and two other countries is that it's decimal. It's based on powers of 10. That's why it's so easy to go from small to big just in your head once you practice it a little bit. But if I ask you, for instance, how many teaspoons there are in an acre foot, that's your system, the one you grew up in, you're not going to have any idea without doing some research, right? What is an acre foot? Do you even know what an acre foot is? It's a unit of volume. Consider an acre, which is area, and fill it up to a depth of 1 foot. That's an acre foot. Well, the number of teaspoons that are in that is one shitload. There's a lot. But it's hard to compute because it's not based on powers of 10. On the other hand, if I ask you how many microliters there are in a gigaliter, which is tiny volume in a huge volume, it's easy to compute in your head once you're used to it. But time is kind of an exception because even in the metric system, we still use seconds, minutes, and hours, which are not based on 10, right? They're based on 60. So hours, minutes, seconds are used in the silly system and the metric system. What about mass? Here's one that points out the silliness. I will be very surprised if any of you in this class knows in your own system what the unit of mass is. Any guesses? No, pounds is a unit of weight. Grams is a metric unit.
Oh, but our silly unit?
Yeah, the silly system. That's volume. And it's metric. What did you say? S. It is the slug.
Oh, yeah.
Which engineers used to use. Now, any scientist, even in the United States, uses the metric system. So they wouldn't use the slug anymore. But that actually is the unit of mass. In the metric system, it's the gram, though. All right. This actually brings up one of the many things that pisses me off about this whole thing. If a bathroom scale is made for Americans, sold for Americans, then you usually have two different scales of numbers on it, right? The bigger numbers have what units?
Kilograms.
No, not if it's for America.
Pounds.
Which is the silly system, but that's appropriate units, because what are you measuring when you stand on a scale? Weight, which is a force, right? So it should have units of force, which pounds are. That's not what pisses me off. What pisses me off is that the smaller numbers below that, the so-called conversion numbers, are what? The metric. Kilograms, which is not a unit of weight. Kilograms are units of mass, not weight. And so if you took that bathroom scale to the moon, you'd have the same mass. You stand on it, you'd only have 1/6 of the weight. So it would lie to you in kilograms. It would tell you you have 1/6 of the kilograms that you actually have. Because it shouldn't be metric mass units, it should be metric weight units. All weights are forces, so what should the metric unit be used? What is the metric unit of force? Does anyone know? In his honor, it is the Newton. So if you want to properly report your weight in metric units, you should be saying Newtons. Not kilograms. Kilograms is your mass. All right. It doesn't really piss me off that much. But it is silly. Volume. Now, I'm skipping length because we already talked about that. It is fundamental, and therefore any unit is fundamental. What about volume? Is it fundamental or derived?
Derived.
It is derived. Why? Not just because it's a hell of a lot more likely for any unit to be, quantity to be derived. Why specifically is volume derived?
Just with mass and weight.
Not mass. Has nothing to do with mass. For instance, a dump truck has a certain volume in its bed, and it can be carrying shaving cream, air, or lead. They have drastically different masses, but they all occupy the same volume. Volume only concerns itself with the amount of space occupied. But how do you compute that? If it's a cube, for instance. Length times width times height, which is like saying distance times distance times distance, because those words are just synonyms for distance. So, just like area is made up of two distances, volume is made up of three distances. Doesn't matter that they're all the same kind of quantity. The fact that there's two or more of them makes it derived. Any volume unit will therefore be a derived unit. What are some units? In the silly system, you have all kinds of choices.
Gallons,
cups, teaspoons, acre feet, like I said. All kinds of choices. And see, cooking is the closest I think people get in the silly system to actually knowing it pretty well. But it's still inconvenient, right? Because it's not based on powers of 10. It's you have fluid ounces. That's, by the way, don't be confused with that. A fluid ounce is a volume unit, not a weight unit. Ounces are weight. A fluid ounce is the volume occupied by enough water for the thing to weigh exactly an ounce. But a fluid ounce doesn't have to be water. A fluid ounce is the volume occupied by 1 ounce of water on Earth. Anyway, there's how many fluid ounces in a cup? Or how many in a teaspoon? You learned this for 2 decades. I think it's 2 for a teaspoon, and then 3 teaspoons for a tablespoon, right? You have 8 fluid ounces in a cup. Then you can go up to quarts and blah, blah, blah. It's a mess. It's a bitch to work with, but since the United States is a powerful country, they're just telling the rest of the world, we're sticking with it. It's embarrassing. Now, let me think about how 48 years ago, I was in fifth grade. And that's when I remember the teacher saying, we're going to learn the metric system today, back in the 70s. And you need to pay attention because pretty soon that's all we'll be using. Almost 50 years later, we're not a centimeter closer than we were back in the 70s of truly adopting the metric system, except for scientists. Well, anyway, what is a metric unit of volume? Liter. Yes. One thousandth of a liter, which is a milliliter, also goes by another name. One milliliter is also one cubic centimeter. So if you want to picture how big a milliliter is in volume, it's 1 centimeter, picture a cube, 1 centimeter by 1 centimeter by 1 centimeter. That's 1 milliliter. If you then take 1,000 of those, that makes up 1 liter. And so on. Force, we've already talked about. Temperature, now is that fundamental or derived? Well, that's the better guess usually, but actually temperature is fundamental as well. Now, even more importantly though, what is temperature? Temperature is not actually energy. Heat is energy, but temperature and heat, just like mass and weight are different but related, temperature and heat are not the same thing. Heat is an example of an extensive property. Meaning the extent that you have, how much stuff, determines how much heat you have. Whereas temperature is an intensive property. All right, the heat is the energy of the motion of particles. Therefore, the more particles you have, the more heat you have. Temperature, though, is an indication of the average speed of the particles in your sample, regardless of how many there are, right? An average divides by however many you have, so it can be any number of particles. As a real-world example, consider a swimming pool. Pretty big volume of water. There's a hell of a lot of water molecules in there. And therefore, there is a lot of heat contained in that large number of particles. If you measure the temperature, though, you're measuring the average speed of those particles, indirectly at least, which doesn't depend on how many there are, right? Because it's an average. So the temperature is whatever you measure it to be. If you take a spoonful out of water out of the pool and measure its temperature immediately, it will be the same temperature as the entire pool, right? In other words, the extent doesn't matter, just the intensity. But there's a hell of a lot less heat in a spoonful of water compared to the pool. Okay, so heat and temperature are not the same thing, but they are related. Temperature, by the way, has been measured throughout the ages in many different scales. There's really only 3 major scales that are used by a lot of people still. What are those?
Fahrenheit.
Yes, the Fahrenheit scale, which most people don't make so drastically German. That's the silly system that we use, right, still? I mean, it's part of the silly system. That's the one you're familiar with. What else? Celsius, which used to be called the centigrade scale, meaning 100 gradations, 100 steps. Let's talk about these for a second and compare them. Celsius is based on water. So both of these have a zero, but the zero of Celsius is defined as the temperature at which water, under normal pressure on Earth, freezes. So it's the freezing point of water. That's why they set that at zero, based on water. And 100, that's the other end of the scale in centigrade, 100 steps, 100 gradations, is the boiling point of water. Okay? What are those corresponding values in the Fahrenheit scale? What's freezing of water? 32. And what about boiling? 212. Notice that's a difference of 180 rather than just 100. So they're the same temperature. 212 and 100 are the same, and 32 and 0 are the same. But the scales are the size of the gradations are different. And maybe you've learned that to convert between Fahrenheit and Celsius in either direction involves a 1.8 conversion factor. That's because 180 divided by 100 is 1.8. And so there's just more steps in the Fahrenheit scale. They're smaller. What are the names of the units in Fahrenheit? Close. They are not called degrees. They're called degrees Fahrenheit. So a degree symbol by itself doesn't tell you that's Fahrenheit, is my point here. Right? You have to write degrees, capital F. That's because the units in Celsius are also degrees, but those are not the same degrees. You don't call these degrees by themselves either. You call them degrees Celsius. Now, what is the third still in wide use temperature scale? The Kelvin scale, which can also be called the absolute scale. Named after another dead man. The reason that the Kelvin scale is also called the absolute scale is because it doesn't arbitrarily set zero at some place like the freezing point of a substance. The zero of the Kelvin scale is truly zero, the coldest temperature that's attainable. Well, now think about what I just told you temperature is. What was that? What is temperature? An indication of the average speed of the particles. So what is the lowest temperature that... What's happening at the lowest possible temperature? Nothing's moving. Right. The speed is zero. You can't go below that. You can go below zero in the other scales because they're just... The zero's arbitrarily positioned, but not in the Kelvin scale. So zero's way down here. Can't go below it. There are corresponding values that are negative in the other two scales. There's a relationship. Both the Kelvin scale and the Celsius scale are considered metric scales, even though they're different. And that's because they're the sizes of the increments is the same for both scales. The numbers aren't the same. Those don't match up. But the steps in the Kelvin scale are exactly the same size as degrees Celsius. What do we call those steps in the Kelvin scale? Any idea? They're not degrees. They are called Kelvins. All right? So a Kelvin is one step. And don't write degrees, capital K. That's wrong. They're not degrees. They're kelvins. All right? And just to give you an idea of where it matches up with Celsius, true zero, absolute zero, is -273.15 degrees centigrade. True cold. All right. Now, number of particles. We discussed that for moles, but the mole, that's just one unit of number of particles, right? Since number of particles is fundamental also, though, the mole or any other unit of number of particles is also fundamental, like dozen. Dozen and mole are both units of number of particles. Any questions so far? Then let's take a closer look at the metric system. It's easy to show you the metric system. Oh, that's already off. On a single slide, because of its sanity. That's the whole reason it's accepted, because it's not based on these totally different numbers of things in other units, like teaspoons to cups and so on. It's all based on powers of 10. And so all you really need to do to learn the metric system is to learn the various prefaces or prefixes that are used in the system. This table doesn't show you any units, by the way. The unit depends on what quantity you're measuring. So if you're measuring mass, for instance, then there is a base unit for that. The base unit in the metric system is the unit you use without any of the prefixes. That's represented here just by the dash in the middle of the table. If you are measuring mass, then the base unit would be the gram. If you're measuring temperature, then it would be a degree centigrade, Celsius, or a Kelvin. Right? If you're measuring distance, it would be a meter. Those aren't listed here because this is about the prefixes used, which are used for all units, not just one quantity's units or another. You following me on this? Okay, so the base unit is multiplied by a power of 10, but notice it's 10 to the 0. Well, what is 10 to the 0? 1. Any non-zero number raised to the 0 power is 1. So, what this shows you is that the base isn't being multiplied to make it bigger or multiplied to make it smaller. It's the base. Well, you can measure any mass in grams, because grams is a unit of mass. But depending on what you're measuring, it might be inconvenient to use that unit. If you're measuring the mass of the Earth, yes, you could measure it in grams, but it's going to be a hell of a big number, right? Inconveniently big to use, even though it would be correct. It's just a pain, right? You wouldn't measure, just like I was facetiously saying, how many teaspoons in an acre foot. You could measure that, but you wouldn't want to measure that in teaspoons because they're too small of a unit to be appropriate. That's why you use these metric prefaces. If you're in need of a bigger unit, you can go above the base. If you're in need of a smaller unit, you can go below the base. So it's just a matter of learning what each of these prefaces means. All right, the base unit doesn't have a prefix, like gram by itself for mass or meter for distance. If you're measuring how far you've driven, you're probably not going to measure that in meters, right? Inconveniently small. So you would measure it in kilometers. Well, kilo by itself means 1,000 of. So you never use kilo by itself. That's why there's a dash after it. It's kilo, and then the unit of the base unit. And the name of the base unit, I mean. In this case, the base unit is meter, because you're measuring distance, so it would be kilometer. If you're measuring volume, kiloliter, and so on. But kilo by itself means 1,000 of those. So a kilometer is 1,000 meters. It's 1,000 times as big, which means you multiply it by 1,000. In terms of powers of 10, though, which is this all is based on, 1,000 is 10 to the third. All right, so kilo means 10 to the third times the base. Speaking of powers of 10, in science we call those orders of magnitude. So if you say that Y is two orders of magnitude as big as X, that really means it's 100 times as big as X. Because two orders of magnitude means 10 raised to the second power, which is 10 times 10, or 100. Three orders of magnitude is 1,000 times as big. That's what kilo is. Well, this is a single step in this chart. You go up one step, that's three orders of magnitude difference from the base. And every step is another three orders of magnitude. Okay? So each row is 1,000 times as big as the row below it, immediately below it. So if a kilo whatever is not big enough for your uses, then you can go to a mega whatever. A megagram is 10 to the 6th grams. Because three orders of magnitude above 10 to the 3rd is 10 to the 6th. You add in three more to the exponent. It's all making mathematical sense? Tell me if it doesn't. Okay, well that's making big ones. If your unit, the base unit is already too big because you're measuring something really tiny, then you don't want to use the base, you want to use something smaller. And so you can go down three orders of magnitude at a time as well. Milli means 10 to the negative third. 10 to the negative third is just another way of saying 1 over 10 to the third. In other words, 1 over 1,000, 1,000th of. Okay, a milligram is 1/1,000th of a gram. In other words, a gram is 1,000 milligrams. Okay? Micro, 10 to the negative 6, 1 millionth of. Nano, 1 billionth, and so on. Okay, now look at the letters used here. With one exception, all of the prefaces that make it bigger, in other words, above the base, start with a capital letter, and that's by design. That tells you this is a prefix that makes it bigger than the base, not smaller. To be consistent, they would have also made kilo capitalized, because it also makes it bigger. But we usually don't use the whole prefix as a spelled out word. We use the symbols shown in the second group, the second column. What would have been the problem if they'd kept kilo with a capital K? That means the symbol would have been capital K. Capital K is already used for Kelvin. So they couldn't have done that, or it would have confused the hell out of things. That's the only reason, though. All the ones that make them smaller, though, have lowercase letters as the initial and the symbol by itself. Well, milli makes sense why it's an M. Micro also starts with an M, though, right? So what is this symbol that's used for micro? It is a lowercase m, but not in the same alphabet. This is a mu. It's not a U. So don't use U on your keyboard to abbreviate this. This is a U. A mu has nothing to do with U. A mu is a Greek M, and it has this preceding tail. And you can do this on a computer if you use the right key combination. But U is not correct for micro. Anyway, that's why they use that instead. The rest just are based on the initial. Well, look at this entire range. From the yocto down here, which is 10 to the negative 24th. That is a tiny, tiny, tiny fraction. All the way up to 10 to the positive 24th. That is a hell of a lot of orders of magnitude. So it doesn't matter whether you are a cosmologist measuring galaxies or a particle physicist measuring the smallest things that make up atoms. One of these prefixes will be appropriate for you. That's an enormous range. It covers everything. It covers a lot more, though, than we need really in biology. It gets way too big for biology and gets way too small. So you don't have to know all of these. Which brings me to the next table. This is the same table, almost, except there's some colors, obviously. Well, the red ones are either too big or too small for us to be concerned with in biology. So you don't have to know those. The white ones you do have to know, and those were in the previous table as well. The yellow ones were not in the previous table. Remember, in the previous table, each step was three orders of magnitude? Well, right around the base, either right above it or right below it, we've added one step, one order of magnitude steps to make it even more choices of units. Okay? And those are deca, meaning 10 of, 10 to the first, not 10 to the third. Hecto, meaning 100 of, 10 squared. Those both make them bigger. Deci, 1/10 of. Centi, 1/100 of. That's why a penny is called a cent. It's 1/100 of a dollar. All right. So those are just, those one order of magnitude steps only occur on either side of the base. After that, you go three orders of magnitude at a time. So you have to know the white and the yellow for this course. Memorize what they mean, but also make sense of what I'm about to say. It's a common sense thing, but it confuses a lot of people. If you're measuring something, whatever it is, that thing doesn't change no matter how many times you measure it, right? So you're measuring the same quantity, but you can use different units. Well, if you use smaller units to measure that quantity, hopefully it makes sense to you that your answer is going to be a greater number of units, right? It takes a greater number of small units to make up the whole. Whereas if you're using big units, there's going to be fewer units. This is like the old pizza joke you probably heard. The guy asks whether you want, the pizza seller asks the person whether he wants it cut into 8 pieces or 6. And the guy says, 8 because I'm really hungry. Well, it's not any more pizza, right? But the point is, 8 is using smaller units, so there's more of them. The bigger units, there's fewer of them. Keep that in mind because that's going to be important in the next topic, which is dimensional analysis. Before I get there, though, any questions on the metric system? I mean, I know you haven't memorized this yet, but you will by next week. Okay? Then let's go to dimensional analysis, which is something that typically students try to avoid as though they're being tortured, even though it's really designed just to make sure you are getting good answers. That alone is a good enough reason to do it correctly. Also because I'm telling you that you need to, that's another reason, and also because it's scientifically correct to do this. Dimensional analysis gets its name because, as I said earlier, a dimension is another name for a unit. So it has to do with units. This is why students hate it. They're used to using calculators. You don't put units into a calculator. So a typical student wants to just write down numerals, no units, just magnitudes, which are the numbers, and spit out an answer. That's not dimensional analysis. That's just math that might be right, but likely is wrong. Dimensional analysis is used for several different reasons, but what we care about in this course, and what I'm going to demonstrate, is the use of dimensional analysis for the purpose of conversion problems. All right? And so we'll start with an example here. The problem is, how many millimeters are in 150 miles? First of all, I want you to notice that it's 150. If that point weren't there, it would be problematic, and I'll talk about that in a little bit. But it's 150 miles, okay? This happens to be a conversion problem in which you're going from one system to the other. You're starting out in the silly system, and the answer needs to be in the metric system, all right? Not all conversion problems are like this. You can convert from one place in the metric to another place in the metric, for instance. But anyway, that's the problem. 150 miles is how many millimeters? Well, to do this correctly, for the purposes of dimensional analysis or for the purposes of a quiz, let's say, you really perform what is serial multiplication. All of these things in parentheses are being multiplied together, right? In math, what do you call things that are multiplied by each other? For instance, things that you add together are called addends. What do you call things that are multiplied together?
Products.
Products is the answer. That's what you get when you've done the multiplication. But what are the things that are being multiplied? No, multiples are also answers because you've already done the multiplication. 1 times 3, for instance, is a multiple of 1. They're called factors. Right? That's why when you factor an equation, you're putting it into the form where it's two things multiplied by each other in parentheses. They're factors. Okay, well, as you see here in red, all but this first parenthesis, these are all, well, they're all factors, but all of these, except for the first one, are conversion factors. Meaning they are factors used to do some sort of converting. The first one, though, is simply what is given in the problem, which you should recognize just from the question. What are you given here? 150 miles. That's what you already know, right? Well, 150 miles you could write down by itself. But since all of the other factors are going to be fractions, I just personally like to make the first one a fraction as well. You can make anything a fraction just by putting it over 1 if it's not already a fraction. Right? So that's why I wrote it as 150 miles over 1. So it's a fraction. It doesn't change anything about it. Okay, now think about this pizza thing, which relates to this. We're making, I mean, there is one quantity here, right? The quantity is what? What is the quantity we're working with? I mean, you told me earlier you haven't mastered the difference between quantity and length, or distance, in other words. That's the quantity, okay? There's a specific magnitude to the quantity. There is a specific distance we're working with here, right? That does not change in the conversion. You're working with the same distance throughout the process. So the distance doesn't change here. The only thing that changes is how you describe that distance in different units. But the conversion is serial multiplication. Now think about math here. If you have to start with a value, that's the distance, and end with that same value, the same distance, What is the only thing in math that you can multiply by to not change its value?
One,
the multiplicative identity. I say that because really a conversion factor is just an alternative version of one. There's infinitely many ways of representing one, right? A trillion and one over a trillion and one, that's one. As long as the numerator and the denominator equal each other, and they're not zero, then that fraction overall equals one, correct? So really this is the original measurement times 1 times 1 times 1 times 1 times 1, which is why you don't change the value of the distance. All you're doing is changing the units used. Each individual conversion factor, though, is equal to 1 because the numerator equals the denominator in that same fraction. Is that all clear? Why do you bother doing this? Because the question is asking you to express this one distance that doesn't change in millimeters rather than the miles that it's in to begin with. So you can do this in as many steps or as few steps as are required, depending on how many conversion factors you know. If you had memorized a conversion factor that converts from miles to millimeters, you would be done in one shot. But few people have that memorized. So you have to resort to ones that you might have memorized. And the silliness of the silly system is you might not even know these conversion factors. But the process is always the same in these conversion factors using dimensional analysis. You always start with what you're given. In this case, it's 150 miles. I make it a fraction. I'm going to rewrite this as we go. 150... Importantly, I put the dot there. Miles. Miles is MI, not M. M is meters. Over 1. Okay? That's just what I'm given. Now, immediately, almost unthinkingly, the next step is to simply make an empty fraction that is going to be your first conversion unit. So don't fill anything in yet, just make the spaces. Here's the way you should approach this, though. Your answer cannot have miles in it. So you need to get rid of those miles. At the moment, miles are on the top, they're in the numerator. So that you get rid of them by putting them in a denominator, right? So that they cancel out. Miles divided by miles, They disappear. It's just one. Is that clear? So don't worry about any numbers. Don't worry about any other units yet. Just put the unit you need to get rid of in the appropriate place in your next empty fraction. Now you could go from miles to anything if you knew the values. But here, like I said, we didn't know how many miles per millimeter, so we're not doing it in one step. Well, here we're using the 1760 yards per 1 mile. Did you have that one memorized as a kid or now? Did you have 5,280 feet per mile memorized? You didn't have either memorized? Usually it's one or the other. You could use either of those. Like I said, there's multiple ways of doing the same problem. But if you happen to know this one, use it. If you stopped there, the miles will have canceled, but your answer would be in yards. That's why you know you're not done. And that's why you won't know whether you're done if you don't bother putting the units on this. That's what students are reluctant to do. So the whole point is using the units. All right, so the same process. Now you need to get rid of yards. So you put those downstairs since they're upstairs right now. You can go from yards to anything. In this example, we're using the fact that there are 3 feet in every yard. Now let me get back to what I was saying about big units being fewer and small units being greater number. Remember that every individual conversion factor is equal to 1, so the top is equal to the bottom. It's the same measurement, just in different units. Well, whatever the bigger unit is, whether it's on the top or the bottom, the bigger unit is always going to have associated with it a smaller number. And the smaller unit needs to have a bigger number for them to equal each other. Right? Like 6/6 of a pizza is equal to 8/8 of a pizza. Feet are smaller than yards, so it makes sense that the number of feet is greater than the number of yards in that same distance. All right, we're not done, though, because now our answer would be in feet, so we continue the process. Here we're using inches to feet, 12 inches. Once again, the smaller unit gets the bigger number, 1 foot. All right, that's important because we're doing a silly to metric conversion here. And for distance, there you don't have to memorize every conversion factor, but there is one in particular that is worth memorizing. And that's why I wanted to get us to inches, which we are now in. Because once we're to inches, if it's a distance problem, we can make the leap from silly to metric or vice versa because of an exact, this is not an estimate, an exact conversion factor that's worth memorizing. And that is between inches and centimeters. Centimeters are smaller or bigger than inches?
Smaller.
Smaller, so they'll have the bigger number. Well, there are exactly 2.54 centimeters in 1 inch. What I mean by exactly is that that's not rounded. You could write it as 2.54, as I did, but you could also write it as 2.54000, as many zeros as you want. It has infinite precision, infinite number of significant figures. It's an exact value. Okay? Similarly, there's exactly 3 feet in 1 yard, so you could write that as 3 point as many zeros as you want as well. The reason that's important is because we'll eventually get to these significant figures as a topic, and these exact values don't constrain the significant figures at all. It's just more convenient to write it without the zeros, but it has really infinitely many zeros after it. Okay, now we are out of the silly system, but we're in the metric system. We're not done yet, though, because we would be in centimeters, right? And the question is asking for millimeters. Okay, now, if you have not yet mastered the metric system, then I don't recommend going directly from here to the answer, even though after you practice for a while, you can easily do that in your head. If you're already in the metric system but not where you need to be, I recommend temporarily going from where you are, which is centimeters at the moment, to the base, which is meters, right? If you do that, then you can keep straight what you memorized these prefixes to represent. Centi means 1/100th of. That's in relation to the base, not in relation to any other prefix. It's in relation to the base. 1/100th of the base. So that's why you should go to the base. Well, if there's a hundredth, if a centimeter is 1/100th of a meter, which it is, then that means it takes 100 centimeters to equal 1 meter. It's smaller than a meter, so it gets the bigger number. Alright? If you went from centimeters to decimeters or anything else, then you'd have to think about how to convert prefixes. Don't do that. Go from where you are to the base, and then... Oh, sorry, I did this wrong. Centimeters have to be in the bottom, meters at the top, but it's always 100 with centimeters and 1 with meter. Okay, now the centimeters cancel, and we're in meters. But once we're at the base, then you can go from the base to where you need to be based on the question, which in this case is millimeters. then you only have to rely on your memorized meaning of milli, which if you don't already have it memorized, is 1/1000th of. It's smaller. Milli is smaller than the base, so it takes 1,000 of those. Oops. To equal 1 meter. The reason you go through all this, writing all these units carefully, is because it shows you then that you've set it up correctly. You've set it up correctly if all of the units cancel except whatever units need to be in your answer. And these do. Right? That all clear? Now, a little bit about proper use of calculators. Don't make the mistake of hitting equals multiple times within a problem. You should hit equals one time if you're doing operations that are equal in the hierarchy of mathematical operations. Multiplication and division are equal to each other in that hierarchy. They have equal precedence. They're also, because of the commutative property of multiplication, these can be done in any order. As long as you're always hitting times for any number that's on the numerator, and you're always hitting divided by for any number that's in a denominator. But don't hit equals until the end. What I mean is that you could enter this, you wouldn't want to do this because you'd confuse yourself, but you could enter it as 3 divided by 1 times 2.54 times 12 divided by 1,000, as long as you're hitting multiply for the top numbers and divided by for the bottom numbers. It makes a hell of a lot more sense, though, to just work left to right. And you don't have to bother putting in any ones because they don't change the value, right? So this would be 150 times 1760 times 3 times 12 times 2.54 times 1,000 divided by 100 equals. Just one press of equals at the end. That'll get you the right answer. Okay? Do it that way. If you do that, you'll get this number. The calculator deals only with magnitudes, just values. It has no idea about significant figures. But this is not the right answer. First of all, the number by itself is never the right answer. The number by itself is simply a magnitude, and that's going to get you a wrong answer. The correct answer needs to have a magnitude and a dimension. In other words, a number and a unit. So that's why you have millimeters there. But that's still not the answer. This is wrong. Because we are not justified in giving this much resolution to our measurement. We really don't have this many significant figures we can work with. We're constrained by however many significant figures there are in the value we used with the fewest significant figures. Now that's not 1 or 3 or 12, because those are exact values. That's why I said they could be represented by 12.0000. They have as many significant figures as you want. So they're not limiting us at all. In this case, what's limiting us is the original measurement, 150. And that's why that dot is so important. Because if it's just 150, you don't know how many significant figures there are there because of that trailing zero. It has at least 2, because the 1 being a non-zero number and the 5 being a non-zero number, those are both significant. But when you have a trailing zero, a zero to the right, maybe that zero is significant, maybe it isn't. You can't tell. When you put a decimal point there, though, that makes this trailing zero significant. And if I had other zeros after the decimal point, those would also, by definition, be significant. Okay? But 150 by itself has either two or three significant figures. You can't tell from that notation. Well, this brings up notation as a little side topic. This is standard notation when you use just numerals and decimals, decimal points. Standard notation is sometimes convenient. But in science, we often use scientific notation. There's two different reasons for this, but they're not equal in importance. One reason that we use scientific notation is just because it's a pain in the ass to use standard notation for a really, really small number or a really, really big number. Right? Like 10 to the 24th. If you write that in standard notation, you have to write those 23 zeros after the 1. Pain in the ass. Or 10 to the negative 24th. You have to write 0.0000 until you finally get to the 1. Also a pain in the ass. So it's more shorthand, in a sense, more convenient to use scientific notation. But that's not the important reason. The important reason for using scientific notation is that it eliminates ambiguity with respect to significant figures. Scientific notation uses some numeral point, some number of numerals, like 2.34, for instance, times 10 to some exponent. All right? Now that, to a calculator, 2.34 times 10 to the fifth is written how in standard notation? 234000, right? Because you have to move that decimal point 5 places to the right. Well, if you started with standard notation, 234000, you don't have any idea how many significant figures you have. You know that you have at least 3. But it could be 3, 4, 5, or 6. Depending on which of these zeros, if any, is significant. Are you following me on this? That's why we don't use it. In scientific notation, though, it's unambiguous because whatever comes before the times 10, you don't have to care whether it's a zero or not. Just how many numerals there are before the X tells you how many significant figures there are in that value. This one has 3 significant figures because 2, 3, 4. If I wanted to write the same value, let's say that this first zero is also significant, then in scientific notation I would write that as 2.340 times 10 to the fifth. You see the difference? This one has 4 numerals before the X, so there are 4 significant figures, and so on. So 150 without the dot, that's either 1.5 times 10 squared or 1.50 times 10 squared, depending on how many significant figures there are. The calculator sees them equal, but they're not equal with respect to significant figures. That's why I wrote it as 150 point. That means 1.50 times 10 squared. All right? Now, back to this constraint. We can't have an answer that has more significant figures than the weakest link leading up to the answer. Well, none of these other things constrains us because these are all exact. They have infinite number of significant figures. But this has 3, and only 3. It has exactly 3. Therefore, we have to round our answer right here so that our answer will only have 3. This 4 that comes after the last significant figure, which is the 1, is below 5, so we don't round the 1 up. And that's why the answer is 2.41 times 10 to the 8, because you have to move 8 points, 8 places to get it there. Millimeters. You sure you saw that last part? Okay. That's the way to do it. Now you want, I'm going to do another one real quick, just to show you that they're really all the same. Just it's a matter of using the same technique. So let's use another distance one. Let's go from metric to silly this time. So 323.4 gigameters is equal to how many let's say miles. Well, no, let's say yards. What's the very first step? Oh, by before we get to this second example, let me say that we're still not done even when we get to the 2.41 times 10 to the 8th millimeters. There's one step with a lot that some people skip and that you never should. And that last step is to ask yourself whether that answer makes any sense. Because if you just trust yourself, you might have missed something in the setup that was totally wrong. Well, let's look at this. We're going 150 miles. You have a feel for how big that is. We're going to express that in millimeters. Well, a millimeter is this big, right? So you should expect there to be a hell of a lot of millimeters in 150 miles. Your answer, in other words, should be big. Well, it is. It's 10 to the positive 8th. If this were 2.41 times 10 to the negative 8th, you know you did something wrong by that final does it make sense test. So don't skip that. But anyway, back to this example. What's the very first step? No, that's not the first step. That's asking you what it's... I mean, that's a step along the way, but what is the very first step in these conversion problems in general? Write down what you've given from the question, right? Which is what? 323.4 gigameters. Make it a fraction. Always start that way. You're given something in each of these problems. Next step, making an empty fraction, right? So you can get rid of the unit that doesn't need to be or can't be in the answer. It's at the top right now, so we need to put gigameters in the bottom. Don't write any numbers down until you first decide on your two units. Okay, now we're at somewhere in the metric system, right? We eventually want to go to the silly system. So that means, since we're using distance, you want to take advantage of that 2.54 centimeters per inch, because that allows you to make the jump from system to system. In other words, we need to get from gigameters to centimeters, since centimeters is involved in that one, that 2.541, okay? But, as I told you before, until you're used to the metric system, you should not go from one prefix to another. Instead, go from where you are, which is gigameters, to the base, which is meters. Then all you have to do is remember what giga means. Well, do you already know what that is? Let me show you the table again real quick. Giga is big. It's three orders of magnitude to get to kilo, three more to get to mega, three more to get to giga. So it's 10 to the 9th, which is a billion. All right, a gigameter is 1 billion meters. Really long distance. Okay. It's by far bigger than a meter, though. So that means there's how many meters in a gigameter? A billion. The smaller unit always has the bigger number. I'm just going to write it as 10 to the 9th. You could write it as 1 followed by 9 zeros in 1 gigameter. All right. Now that we're at the base, we can go from the base to where we need to be. Where do we need to be? Centimeters, so we can take advantage of that 2.54 thing. All right. Now all we have to do is rely on your memorized knowledge of what centi means, which is 1/100th of 100 centimeters in 1 meter. That's the last stop in the metric system. Now we can take advantage of the exact centimeters to inches one.
It's always 2.54 that goes with centimeters.
It's 1 inch. So don't think about it in terms of one always on the bottom. One depends on what the unit is. 2.54 always goes with centimeters. We put centimeters in the bottom because we need to get rid of them off the top where they are right now. That's why.
Now, we're done with metric. We're in silly. We just need to go from where we are in silly to where we need to be. Well, you could go inches to yards immediately. You know how to do that? Yeah, there's 36 inches in 1 yard.
If you didn't know that, you could go from inches to feet and then from feet to yards. So there's no limit to the number of steps you can take, or there's no lower limit either, as long as you know the appropriate conversion factors. Now that's just the setup,
but this shows you that you've set it up correctly, because everything cancels except yards, which is what the answer, which the question is asking for.
Because that's just a memorized conversion factor. In the silly system, I know that there's a yardstick is 36 inches. There's 36 inches in a yard. It's one of the difficulties of the system, though. It's 36 instead of a power of 10. Harder to work with. All right, that's the setup. Now, I'm not going to do this in my head. Anyone want to tackle this correctly? 3.24, 323.4 times 10 to the 9th times 100 divided by 2.54 divided by 36 equals. Go ahead and do that, someone. And you can enter 10 to the 9th either as 10 EE 9 or 1 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0. Ideally, more than one of you is doing this because we should check to see whether you agree. If you agree, it's more likely that you entered it correctly. No, 10 to the 9th means 1 followed by 9 zeros. But in a calculator, you could enter it as 10 EE 9 if it has an EE key. Which the EE just means raised to the whatever power. This is the boring part of the lectures recordings when you listen to these at home. Anyone have an answer? Yeah. Can't hear you, sorry. 903? Times 10 to the what? Anything? Does it give you an exponent?
That's what the E stands for?
Yeah, the E is an exponent.
I'm not something.
Did you get this number? Did anyone else get this number?
I did not.
What did you get?
I had 353-674-540-682.
Anyone get this number? Yeah. Yeah.
I got 3.23.
Okay, 3.24.
Yeah, it's 3.234.
234. Okay, that's times 10 to the 30th.
13th.
Oh, 13th? Is this the final answer?
I thought it was 12 instead of 13.
divide by this and divide by that. But this is not the answer, right? For two reasons. One is that it's just a magnitude. It's not, doesn't tell you at all a distance. It just gives you, it's just numbers. It doesn't have units, in other words. That's why you know you're not done. That's one reason. So the units would be yards, right? But is this the correct answer yet? For it to be the correct answer, assuming you've put it in correctly, you have to have the right number of significant figures. How many significant figures do we have to work with? Four. All of these are non-zero, so you have four. None of these constrain us. So this answer has four, because it's in scientific notation and there are four digits here. Assuming that whatever came after the four is not greater than five, was it? Okay. Well, anyway, if assuming that that was put into the calculator correctly, which I'm not checking, that would be the correct answer. It has the right number of significant figures, and it has the units. But what is the final step? To ask yourself whether this makes any sense, right? This is a really big number. Does that make sense? Yes, because a yard is this big, and a gigameter is a billion meters. So this should be an enormous number, and it is. Right? You're going from large units to very small units, so the number should get enormous. Because the whole distance stays the same. Is that helpful? Now this is the place in the lecture where everyone says, yes, I can do that. I understand those examples, and I can do that next week. It almost never happens. So whether you lie to me and tell me you understand this and can do it or not, practice it. Yeah?
How are you supposed to put it in the calculator
correctly? 323.4 times 10 EE9 times 100 divided by 2.54 divided by 36 equals. Yeah. You could write it, you could put it in as 1000000000 as well. They're equal. It's 9 zeros. Because it's 10 to the 9th. Well, if you're using a phone for a calculator, yeah. Not all calculators are equal. And so the number, so this number, it looks like this might not be the right number. But anyway, the technique is the important thing. Okay, now this is also the point. Yeah, go ahead. Same thing. It's just some calculators have it as an E key. Oh, you talking about the caret?
Yeah. Over
the caret is the same, but y to the x is totally different. So don't use that. Y to the x is you enter a number, you hit y to the x, and then you hit another number, and it's that first number raised to the second number power. Don't use that. Use that as a single operation. Don't use it as part of a whole long series. All right, now this is also the point where people think we're done, and we're not. Almost, though. So just a little bit more. And the rest of it is just some definitions I want to get straight with you. Specifically three definitions. I want to talk about the definitions and the differences between accuracy, precision, and resolution. I'm sure you've heard of all of these, all three of these. They're important in science in general, not just biology. But who wants to tell me what accuracy is? In your own words.
How close to correct you are?
That's right. Accuracy is closeness to the true value of whatever you're talking about. All right, so you make a measurement, for instance, a single measurement. If it's really close to the truth, it's highly accurate. Now, a lot of textbooks use a dartboard analogy for this, which is a good analogy. The throwing of a single dart is the taking of a single measurement, or represents the taking of a single measurement. The very center, the bullseye, represents the actual truth. So, however close that dart gets to the bullseye determines the accuracy. And not all instruments are equally accurate, right? Some are highly accurate, some are not. That's all there is to accuracy. What about precision? How's that different? And a lot of times, people, like companies, for instance, on advertisements will misuse this. Instead of accuracy, they say precision when they really meant accuracy. They're not the same thing. Precision has to do with repeatability. So it makes sense to talk about accuracy for a single measurement. It doesn't really make any sense to talk about precision for a single measurement. Instead, if you measure the same thing, like putting a mass onto a scale, the same mass over and over, making repeated measurements, well, there's only one truth, right? And so if you have a highly precise instrument, it should be giving you the same answer each time. That's high precision. But it takes multiple measurements for you to talk about precision, not just one. And in the dartboard analogy, that would be analogous to throwing a set of darts, not just one. You throw three darts, for instance. If they have a tight grouping, they're close to each other, that would represent getting very close to the same measurement over and over, then that's high precision. But notice that you can throw, maybe you've done this when drunk, you can throw three darts, have a tight grouping off on the wall somewhere, right? Not even close to the board. That would still be high precision, but it would be low accuracy at the same time. Obviously, you want to have high accuracy and high precision. So that's the difference, though. And also notice you could have low precision and high accuracy in your average. You know, if you throw a group that's all over the place, but the average, which would be like the center of the triangle they make, is right on the bullseye, then that would be highly accurate even though you have low precision in your instrument. That's rarer. Obviously, you want it to be high on both. But that's the difference between the two. And the third is resolution. What about resolution? Well, yeah, yes, that's what the word means in everyday language. In science, what I'm talking about really is the same thing as significant figures, highly related. Resolution is the noun of resolve, the verb resolve. To resolve, it's another way of saying to discriminate. What does it mean to discriminate? It means to tell apart, right? To notice a difference between two things. That's what resolve means. If I put two marks on the wall, for instance, doesn't matter how far apart they are, they're two separate dots, though, right? If I stand close enough to the wall, I can resolve them, which means I can notice that they are two separate dots. I have enough resolution with my eyes to discriminate them. Right? But if I stand farther and farther back, eventually there will be a distance at which those two dots look like one dot to my brain. That's when I lose resolution. I lose the ability to resolve them. This is analogous to pixelation. American television doesn't like showing nudity, right? So they pixelate. Instead of showing you high-resolution image, they'll make it a bunch of big boxes with low resolution, so you can't tell what you're looking at. Well, in significant figures, resolution refers to how many decimal places you can go out to, basically. How many significant figures you have. That's resolution. Using a bathroom scale as another example, if I tell you to jump on the bathroom scale and give me your weight, you'll give me some number. I say, now stay on the scale. I'm going to hand you this postage stamp. I want you to tell me the combined weight of you and the stamp now. Typical bathroom scale is not going to have high enough resolution to be able to tell the difference between the combined weight and just your weight, right? But if you use a very high resolution scale, it will be two different measurements. That's resolution. Okay. Now, I am satisfied if you are. But if there's anything you don't understand, stick around. Other than that, though, I'm okay with you leaving if you learn the metric system and the other stuff that I did. This is a long lecture recording to listen to. They're not going to be like this usually in the lab. Usually you're going to be doing something. I'll talk for a few minutes and then you'll be doing an activity. So this is unusual. Also, this first quiz is unusual in that it takes twice as long usually as the other ones. Usually quizzes are 10 minutes. This one will probably take 20 minutes, this first one. But know the stuff you learned today. Listen to the recordings. And there are some metric system practice problems online already. But I will make sure, if it's not already up there, I just can't remember. If the actual metric pre-lab is not already up there, then I'll post it by latest tomorrow morning so that you can hand in the paper copy when you come in next week. All other pre-labs the night before via Canvas, not paper. Okay.